So when we gathered as a ministry team on Wednesday of this week, we had lots of interesting discussion. We always do. But there was one part of this discussion that's really stuck with me all week. And it's a conversation we had about those bits of scripture that we sometimes find uncomfortable, obscure, or to be frank, offensive, which we sometimes, some might say often, have in our lections Sunday by Sunday. The Hebrew scripture reading from last week is a case in point. Taken from the book of Genesis, as one of our number who shall remain nameless said, there was a lot about women being given away and then being gone into, which seemed a little bit distressing. You can check it out in Genesis chapter 28, verses 15 to 28, if you need a reminder of that. The story of Jacob and Rachel and Leah and their father Laban. The comment about it being strange and disrespectful towards women is a valid point. For many of us who've been in the church for a long while, or for any while, when we open our Bibles, we have a kind of automatic contextualization machine in our head that allows us to sift out those bits of scripture we find valuable. And we can root out to a certain degree the bits that are far removed from our own way, our own thinking. And we forget that scripture comes from a culture and a society far removed from our own, a patriarchal, tribal, indeed often misogynistic world, which we could spend an awful long time unpacking. We'd also see, though, if we look through the sweep of scripture, a development in that understanding, a growth, an opening, and an evolution. So every now and then, those of us who are preaching might make mention of this in a sermon, but because some weeks we don't want to spend 5 minutes getting into and out of what we actually want to say, we don't say anything about what we aren't preaching on. And we hope by not drawing attention to it, no one will notice, perhaps. Or I think there are times that we just leave it hanging. We just deliberately let scripture speak, allowing scripture to shock us and to disturb us and to bemuse us. Because to a certain degree, that's how we should respond to scripture. Sometimes we have to do the work ourselves. Look up what it means when Laban gives his daughters away in exchange for work. Form our own opinions of why this is so very inappropriate, and why the view of women as goods and chattels still needs challenging today. Or consider the real reasons behind the psalmist's cry, "Blessed is the one that dashes the heads of your children against the rocks." That deep expression of despair and anger which comes from the displaced, the oppressed, and the marginalized. We have to do that for ourselves. Scripture is hard work. Which leads me on to my actual theme for today. I think that important preamble was necessary. I've preached on this theme before on this Sunday, surprise, surprise, but I'm preaching very differently this time. It's a theme which can be seen in some way in all three readings for today, and I took up the challenge to try and include all three. One of my favorite lines in the movie Liar Liar, starring Jim Carrey, is when he discovers that he can't lie anymore. And as a lawyer, he's finding this rather troublesome. And his son wants to prove whether or not this is true, that he can't lie. So he asks him, "Is wrestling real?" And Jim Carrey responds without missing a beat, "When it's at the Olympics, yes. If you see it on television, no." I can't lie. Wrestling. That's my theme for today. There are lots of types of wrestling. And the first thing I want to be clear about is that I see the Jacob and the angel story, or perhaps the Jacob and the manifestation of the divine story, as a metaphor. it strikes me as fully at home in the mythology, in the stories of the foundation of Israel. Not factually or historically true, but filled with truth. As such, we are gifted all these years later with a metaphor that doesn't just relate to Jacob's story or the story of Israel, but to all of our journeys, all of our dances with faith. We are gifted with the idea that it's okay to wrestle with God. It's okay to question. It's okay to dispute, to disagree with how God and the will of God is portrayed to us. It's okay to ask why when something happens that we don't understand or can't explain. It's okay to feel frustration and hurt and anger when it seems that God is impassive or silent. That's the gift of this metaphor of wrestling. Jacob sent his family and his workers on ahead in order that he could wrestle with his fears and excitements and the consequences of his journey of reconciliation with his brother Esau, the brother whom he had sought to trick from his inheritance, the brother from whom he had stolen his father's blessing. Last time Jacob had seen Esau, Esau had been mad, really, really mad. I mean, I'm going to kill you kind of mad. That kind of mad made Jacob realize the consequences of what he had done, and he hot-footed it out of town to make a new life elsewhere, a life which turned out to be prosperous and bountiful, a life where Jacob had learned patience and wisdom and had an awful lot of kids, a life where it would turn out that they have their own super complicated story involving favorites and beautiful coats and a pharaoh who sounds like Elvis or something. That may not be biblically true. Anyway, Jacob doesn't get it right all the time, but at this point with his wrestling, he realizes his need for reconciliation, to reach out to his brother, and he has no idea what he will confront. And so he takes time alone. He takes responsibility for his actions. He seeks to make restitution and longs for forgiveness, which, as an aside, is not a bad summary of what we need to do with our own journey of reconciliation in these lands as a church and as a society. But that's a small digression. But before that encounter between Jacob and Esau, Jacob goes to wrestle with how he feels and what it means and what might be. And that wrestling is expressed in story as Jacob being challenged by a stranger with whom he wrestles till daybreak. Jacob wrestles with God and is blessed by that experience, though the stranger does cheat by dislocating Jacob's hip. But that's another avenue to explore another time. What does it mean when God cheats? But this image of wrestling as a metaphor is, I believe, that gift from our forebears to us, and one which we can apply to our wider scriptural story for today. Take Paul, for instance, in the extract from the letter to the Romans that Larry read for us today. I don't want to dwell on it, but it is one of those what is he on about moments. Here, the apostle is wrestling with the place of his people, the Jewish people, in the work of God, in the greater story of divine, particularly as they have not come to the Messiah as he sees Jesus. Paul eventually comes to the realization that all people, Jewish and the new emerging sect of Christians, are in the divine work of reconciliation in creation. But at this point, he doesn't get it. So we have Paul wrestling in a different way. And then we have the story in the gospel, commonly known as the feeding of the 5,000, which shows another kind of wrestling. Often when preached on, preachers try to explain or explain away this miracle story. But I'd ask, why do we even begin to take this story literally? It seems to be a parable, a sermon in action that relates to God's generosity and bounty, challenging our attitudes of scarcity and our fear of lack, a sign of the abundance that is created when we share and see our common humanity in the crowd. And if you want a beautiful reflection on that, I recommend you chat to Bill, who shared something of his thoughts on this passage with us yesterday. But we see here at the beginning of the passage, in an almost throwaway line, Jesus' approach to wrestling with something. And it mirrors what's happening in our Hebrew scriptures. It says, now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself, wrestling with the news that his cousin John had been beheaded by Herod, he took time out. He needed to take space to absorb this. That was his place of wrestling, his place of prayer. Now, it didn't last long, as when he turned up to where he was going, the crowds were there, and he responded to their need. But Jesus needed to wrestle in prayer. He went away by himself to connect with the world around and with the divine. And perhaps really that's what Jacob was doing, wrestling with prayer. And perhaps we need to do that more often, not expecting prayer or scripture or life to be easy, straightforward, or simple, but wrestling anyway. Thanks be to God.